You're listening to episode 97 of 88 Cups of Tea with Yin Chang.
Am I doing this right? Hi, I'm your host, Yin Chang, and thanks for joining me on 88 Cups of Tea. This podcast is created to leave you feeling motivated from interviews with storytellers, where we learn how they create opportunities for a successful career without losing sight of the values that make us human. Whew, that was a really long run-on sentence.
Hello, my dear listeners. I am so proud that Overdrive is our sponsor for today's new episode. I've been a fan of Overdrive for 6 years, and I'm honored to share the exciting news about their brand new app called Libby. It's designed for readers to discover and enjoy ebooks and audiobooks from your library. Have you downloaded Libby onto your phone or tablet yet? Trust me, you don't want to miss out. I downloaded Libby on my iPhone, and it took me less than 30 seconds to borrow the audiobook versions of Tina Fey's Bossy Pants and Haruki Murakami's Men Without Women. Be sure to hang around at the end of the show so I can tell you more about my experience with Libby. Before I get into more details, if you're new to our show, a very warm welcome. I am so happy to have you here. For all my listeners who've been with us for a while, thank you for hanging with us every week. I'd love to ask for your support in taking a moment to subscribe to 88 Cups of Tea on iTunes and leave a rating and a review. When you take those specific actions, that really helps our show become more visible to new listeners who haven't heard us before. Thank you so much in advance for helping us grow our community. I really appreciate it. As some of you might already know, specifically if you're following us on Twitter at 88 Cups of Tea, or if you're in our private Facebook group, I just made an announcement about it last night in our live Facebook video. Our 100th episode is coming up real quick on August 10th. That's the very same week, on August 8th to be exact, where I'm turning 30 and 88 Cups of Tea is turning 2 years old. So it'll be a big milestone for sure. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at 88 Cups of Tea or subscribe to our newsletter or join our private Facebook group to find out how you can be involved in our combined 2-year anniversary and 100th episode. I'll be making an announcement with all the details very soon, so look out for it. A special shout out to Molly Kathleen and Megan Smith from our private Facebook group who have some birthday celebrating to do this week. Wishing you both a very happy and memorable birthday from Team 88 Cups of Tea. Now on to today's new episode, we have Lauren Maiano with us. Lauren is the author of One of a Kind Like Me, Unico Como Yo, a bilingual children's book inspired by her own experiences with her son and her community activism. In One of a Kind Like Me, a young boy fights gender stereotypes by dressing up as a princess for the school parade. Lauren's book is breaking ground as one of the few bilingual, multicultural children's books about gender diversity, and it's inspired much-needed conversation about gender diversity with educators, families, and children. In today's episode, we dive deeper into Lauren's relationship with her son, Danny, and how he's shown her a world where love is not limited by gender. Lauren has tirelessly dedicated her time to working with organizations, schools, and families to create spaces where gender-diverse young people and their families can thrive. Today's conversation is a really special one for me personally, as I hope all parents of LGBTQ children will be as supportive and loving as Lauren is today. Especially in light of the news yesterday, Lauren's work and contributions are needed now more than ever. For listeners who are curious about the writing-related topics, we discuss why it's beneficial for writers to work with a writing coach and how a writing coach helped to shape Lauren's story. Lauren walks us through her process of being a first-time writer, which covers how to publish and how to market your book, along with the learning curve she had to go through. We also touch on self-publishing versus traditional publishing. Now let's jump right in. Hey everyone, we have Lauren with us today. I am so excited to have her on the show. The work that she's doing is incredible, and we need more people like Lauren out there. She is the author of One of a Kind Like Me. Lauren, how are you?
I am doing well. Thank you so much for having me.
I am so pumped to have you on and to get chatting. Before we get into details, why don't you give us a snapshot of what you want us to know about your book, One of a Kind Like Me?
Sure. One of a Kind Like Me, it's a bilingual children's book, and in Spanish it's called Unico Como Yo. It's based on a true story, it's based on my family, and it's a book about a little boy who wants to be a princess in the school parade.
I know you said it's based off of your family. Could we get into the details of that?
Sure. When My son was a little boy. He loved unicorns and princesses and little ponies and dressing up. He was very different than any of the little boys that I knew. And this was a long time ago. He's 28 now. So this was a while ago. We didn't really know any other families like ours. So it was confusing time for me. And for him, when he was little, he was like, I'm just being who I am, because there wasn't anyone telling him he should be any different. He said that he wanted to be a princess for Halloween when he was almost four, and that's what he did. And I wrote this story based on what really happened. And I wrote this story because when he was little, there were no books about kids like him for children like him or for families like ours. And I wanted to have a book that kids could relate to so that they would know they're not alone, and that families could relate to so that they would know they're not alone.
We were exchanging emails and I shared my story, and my listeners know about this, where I am with a woman. I think for me, a huge part of my coming out is that I had, in the end, very good support system around me. My family's amazing. They're so loving and they're very accepting of my girlfriend. So I think it's a huge thing to have, especially your parents, to have your back. So for you, how were you like with your son? Like, what was the initial reaction that you had? I did read one of your articles, The Six Cultural Barriers to Family Acceptance, in the online site My Kid is Gay. I'm just going to pull out a sentence. He said, I've learned that it wasn't my son that was causing me shame. It was the biases and expectations of the culture I grew up in. And that's something that I definitely resonate with, especially coming from an Asian background. My dad, this is not something traditional Taiwanese people are normally okay with or used to hearing about. So it's definitely a shock for him. And trust me, a lot of the biases and expectations definitely got in the way. He eventually broke it down. How was that like for you? What exactly were you talking about when you mentioned biases and expectations of the culture that you grew up in?
I grew up in Berkeley, California, which is really a liberal town. You would think that maybe, oh, no big deal, right? But even growing up in a liberal town, and I was very politically active, very progressive, when my son was behaving in ways that I thought were more typical of a girl, I was still pretty confused. I didn't know if that was normal behavior, if maybe there was something wrong with him, if I should be worried, if I should try to do something about it, if I should just let him be. And I even felt some shame because I felt like people were looking at him and going, oh, what's wrong with him? He's weird, judging him. And there was some stigma that I definitely felt from the people around me. At that time, I didn't know that my son was just being who he was. He was perfect. He was beautiful. He was wonderful. I question whether there was something wrong with him. And that, I believe, is because of the culture that I grew up in, which Western society. And then, of course, I'm influenced by my parents and my family. But I really believe that this is a cultural barrier that exists in all of Western culture.
Was it just eventually through the years where your son stood strong that affected you and started to change your perspective? Or was there that one moment that was like a catalyst that you remember till this point where, you know, how my example is that my sisters really drilled it into my parents' heads. So that was the catalyst that woke them up. For your own experience, what was that waking moment for you?
There were a couple. One of them was actually when I was having a conversation with my sister, and my son has a younger cousin, and my son's younger cousin, my sister's son, went through a phase where he loved to dress up and he loved to wear dresses, and he even wore a dress to school. When he went to school, some of the kids commented, I don't remember exactly what they said, but something along the lines of, well, you shouldn't wear a dress to school, you're a boy. And he said something like, boys can wear dresses. My cousin Danny wears dresses. For me, I was able to really see a parallel that Danny was opening doors for other kids to be who they were in a similar way that my parents are a mixed race couple. They married in a time when miscegenation, and it was illegal in many states. They did something that was considered socially unacceptable at the time, and they opened doors for a lot of people. And I saw a parallel with Danny that just by being who he was opening the door for other people to be who they are. So that was a big turning point for me. And the learning continued for many years.
Oh, I love that. Throughout the years, how were you able to stay proactive with this learning? Could you give examples, especially for listeners who may have children who are gay or part of the LGBTQ community? What things were you doing to stay proactive in showing your support for your son?
When my son was growing up, to some degree, I was just in survival mode. I was a single mom. I was widowed before he was born. So I went through a really rough time during his early childhood. And as he was growing up, trying to manage supporting him and my family and being a single mom and all of that. So I didn't spend a whole lot of time educating myself, but I got a lot of education from Danny, just from him, watching him and seeing him grow. And one of the things that became really clear to me was how detrimental it is when biases show up around gender. And just a side note, it's really important to make a distinction between gender diversity and sexual orientation, because they're not necessarily the same thing. And in Danny's case, he did grow up to be gay. But when you see a child who is likes to dress up as a princess, you don't really know what that means in terms of their sexual orientation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So in terms of being proactive around my own education, a lot of my education actually happened after Danny grew up and I became more active in the community. I had more space to do that because I wasn't parenting him on a day-to-day basis. And also because he was now out as a gay person, I was able to start speaking out and talking and sharing story and working with other families. And through that, I learned just a tremendous amount from other people in the LGBT community. It was very humbling to realize how many things about gender I had just grown up taking for granted and not questioning, and how much I had to unlearn that was just sort of assumed truths. Like the idea that when a child is born that we know their gender, it's not really true. We don't really know their gender when a child is born.
Mm.
Those kinds of assumed truths and the things that we do where we start calling kids girls and boys from the minute they're born or even before they're born, those kinds of things that we do that are just habitual things in our culture, it was really humbling for me to realize I have quite a bit of unlearning to do. Things like gender pronouns. And when you see somebody knowing that they could identify as a woman, but they might not, I can't really tell by looking at them. They may identify as a different gender. And they may not even identify as a man or a woman. They may use the pronoun they. All of those things require a lot of unlearning and relearning. And I feel really grateful to people in the LGBT community that I've had the opportunity to learn and keep learning. It's not a process that ends. It's a process that continues.
For parents who are fully accepting of their children, however they define themselves, there are parents who have no problem at all. They are completely supportive, but there's that fear that they carry with them about their children out in the open, out in society. And it's a realistic fear that parents do have. It's like, hey, I may show them constant love and support, but not everyone in the public will. Is there something that you can share with those parents to ease their stress and give them a peace of mind?
Yes and no. The no part is that sadly, many of our cultures and society just really aren't safe to be LGBT, especially if you're transgender or gender nonconforming, especially if you're a person of color, especially if you're a transgender woman of color in particular. There's a lot of challenges that children and then adults go through, and hopefully they make it to adulthood and are able to live long lives. But unfortunately, that doesn't happen for a lot of people. So there is a lot of really sobering realities that parents have to come to terms with, or families have to come to terms with, about their children. But a couple of things that I think are important for families to know is, number one, don't try to stop your child from being who they are to protect them, because that can actually do more harm than good. And if you want them to be safe, one of the best ways to make them safe is to make sure that they know that they are loved and supported and that they belong, and to make sure that they have as much support as they can possibly get. And then if you don't want them to go in public in certain places where it's not safe for them to fully express themselves, make sure that you know that you let them know that that's for their own safety. It's not because there's something wrong with them. It's not because you're ashamed of them, but it's because our culture, our society still has some learning and some growth to do to be a place that can be welcoming and supportive of them. There's a lot of nuances that you can't be, oh, just be who you are. But at the same time, you don't want to give children the message that there's something wrong with them. They need to hear the message that they're beautiful, they're perfect, just the way they are. Society has some learning and some growth to do.
Thank you. Going back to your book, that was your first book, right?
Yes.
What was that like? Were you feeling overwhelmed as a new writer and not knowing what you were doing, but you figured it out along the way? What was that like for you?
I would say the process took a tremendous amount of endurance and dedication, that it was fueled by passion, but it wasn't exactly exhilarating. It was a long haul for me. And I was very naive in the beginning. I thought, well, I just have this story and I just need to write it down and see if somebody wants to publish it. And I knew nothing about the publishing industry. So really, I had a huge learning curve around writing for children, because I've done a lot of writing for professionals and things like that, but I've never written for children before. I also had a huge learning curve about just understanding the publishing industry and how to go about figuring out a way to get my book out into the world. And then another huge learning curve around, okay, so once the book is here, how do you actually get the book so that people know about it? It was a huge amount of learning, but the writing part of it, I had a story, but it wasn't a fun children's story. It was just, well, this is what happened, right? Mm-hmm. The first challenge was really, how do you turn it into a fun children's story? I worked with a writing coach for a while, and I took class on writing children's book. Through that process, I wrote, I don't know how many versions of a manuscript, but I just kept writing and writing and writing. And then I got some more coaching. And so some of it was really trying to figure out, okay, where do I create a story that excites people and builds sympathy for the main character and brings out all the different messages that I want to bring out? And then there were also points along the way where I had to do some really deep soul searching about what was most important to me. Because there were some people that were advising me that I should put more of a focus on, like, maybe bullying or adults that didn't understand why he wanted to wear a dress or things like that, and make those more the points of conflict in the story. I got some support from a friend of mine who is also a wonderful children's book creator, Maya Cristina Gonzalez. She was among several of my coaches, but one that was really helpful in helping me come back to what was my truth and what did I really want to have the focus of the story be. And after lots of soul searching, talking with my son, talking with different people, I decided I didn't want anything in the story about a child who's being mistreated. I wanted the story to be about a child who's loved and celebrated.
Oh, I love that.
And more about normalizing diversity and just having it be fine. And so the challenge in the story is all about, how are we going to get this dress? Is he going to get the dress? Is he going to be able to be a princess? And it's not about bullies or anything. There's a really tiny piece at the end with his friends sort of like, well, I don't really know. I've never seen a boy princess before, but it's just really, really small. And I was very clear. I just didn't want anything that was going to make this kid feel like there was something wrong with him.
When you said that you talked to your son and talked it over with him to make this conscious, intentional choice, How involved was he in this? Was he like, hey, mom, this is awesome. I wish I had a book like this growing up. Or was he even more proactive and hands-on?
He happens to be a really great writing critic, I guess.
Nice.
And so he has really great skills. He would look at my drafts and he would give me feedback on the drafts. I don't know how many versions of the drafts he gave me feedback on, but he gave me feedback on several drafts. You know, he knows me well enough, he can just cut to the chase and tell me his honest truth. And even though he was very clear, mom, this is your project, it's not my project, he offered his opinions. And of course, he fully endorsed all of this work that I do. He fully endorses because he thinks it's so important to build the support for young people.
How has that affected your relationship with your son?
Oh, it's really beautiful. When he lived in New York for several years, he was a member of the New York City Gay Men's Chorus. He got to meet so many different men that had so many different stories about their own growing up experience. And I think it really helped him get a different perspective about his own experience and how much support he had, comparatively speaking. And then I did some videos about being his parents, and he shared them with the chorus. So many of the people in the chorus were so appreciative. And I think that really opened eyes to how important and how impactful this work is and how healing, because even though a lot of the work I'm doing is for young people, for adults, there's a healing that goes on when you see parents supporting their children in a way that maybe you didn't get when you were growing up, but you get to see a different reality and a different possibility for children now. When the book came out, he actually arranged for me to visit one of the rehearsals, and I got to make an announcement. And it was one of my favorite moments. Being able to share the book with members of the chorus was really great, and he was really proud.
Oh my gosh, I'm so happy for you both. That's so sweet. You mentioned that it's a whole other ball game just trying to get the word out about your book. How has that been? Is this something that you learned along the way?
So I have a publisher, Blood Orange Press, Janine Macbeth, and she is an amazing person. She has a full-time job and a family, and she does this publishing outside of all of that. She is very, very committed to multicultural children's literature. So somehow she was able to make this happen, and she works with a distributor. There is definitely some support from the publisher side. She's an independent, and she has very few resources. And so a lot of the promotion was on me. And I started way before the book came out, I started seeking help. Like, how do you get a book out into the world? And fortunately, I have a mentor. His name is Herb Cole. He's written numerous books. He was my teacher when I was in high school. And he was so generous in spending time with me and introducing me to a lot of people that he knew and giving me some ideas for how to get the book out. One of the ideas that he had that was probably the most helpful was just get your book on as many lists as you can possibly get it on. He introduced me to Deborah Menkart from Teaching for Change. She put it on her list. That was how it got onto the NPR list. And maybe that's how you found out about it.
Which is how I found out about you, which is super helpful. So that's what you mean by list, is the notables and the ones that stand out.
Yeah, that's what I mean by lists. And different organizations have different lists as well. So he was able to point out for me, well, here's some different organizations. And then there's also different categories of lists. There's social justice books, or there's LGBT books, or books about gender diversity. So getting on different lists based on topic is also really helpful.
That is very, very helpful. I've heard with other authors, they're like building a social media following too is very helpful as well. Jumping back, when we were talking about how you worked with writing coaches, I love that you mentioned that, because I have listeners in the community who talk about writing coaches and are looking for writing coaches. Do you have any advice from your experience working with writing coaches on how you would say that they should go about finding their own writing coaches?
I would say talk to other authors who have done books that you like and find out who they worked with, if they worked with a coach, and what was helpful and what wasn't helpful about working with those coaches. So for me, I work with a writing coach first because it seemed like it was more expedient than taking a whole class and everything. And that was really helpful. Then after I worked with a writing coach, I submitted a manuscript. And you know how this is one of the realities of the publishing world. Sometimes you submit a manuscript, you just have to wait around for 6 months because you're not allowed to submit to more than one publisher. You have to wait till that one publisher says yes or no, but they don't say anything. You just know after you submit it that if you wait for 6 months and you didn't hear anything, then it's a no, right?
My gosh, yeah.
You lose a lot of time during that time. So then during that time that I was sitting around waiting for 6 months, that was when I took the course on children's book writing. And that was super, super helpful.
And was this an online course or in-person course?
It was an in-person course from the Writing Salon in San Francisco. And Sharon Bridges was the teacher. And she is also a writer and she has done publishing. And so she knows both sides of it, the writing side and the publishing side of it really well. So she was a really good teacher in terms of a lot of the technique part of writing a children's book and then practicing writing. But after the course, then she did some one-on-one coaching as well. So that was super helpful.
Did you go that route of querying literary agents or did you have someone that might have introduced you to somebody in the industry?
No, I didn't. I tried the traditional publishing route just a little bit, but it didn't go anywhere. And then I got introduced to my publisher, Janine Macbeth from Blood Orange Press. She was really excited about the manuscript and was really interested in it. I also took this course on publishing options and all the pros and cons of self-publishing versus traditional publishing, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I pretty much decided against the self-publishing route because it was just so much work that I didn't want to have to do myself. Working with Janine seemed like a really great option because she would do a lot of the heavy lifting pieces around the putting the actual book together and having a distribution system already in place and things like that. I wouldn't have to do all that work. Plus, she's very talented and knows what she's doing. So I wouldn't have to figure out the ropes. I would have somebody that already knew the ropes and knew what they were doing. So that was how I ended up going with her. The other benefit of going with her is that I wanted the book out pretty fast because I wanted to use it in my work and I'm already in my 60s. And so I didn't want have to wait until I'm in my 70s or something to have a book. A lot of traditional publishers, it takes years before the book will actually see the book. And so Janine was willing to work on a pretty tight timeline to get the book out, which was super, super helpful for me.
That's awesome. And what about the illustrator? Were you working together with the illustrator or did Janine partner you up with somebody?
So this was a really unusual situation. So I actually found the illustrator when I was considering self-publishing.
Oh.
A friend of mine introduced me to Robert Liu Trujillo, who is a wonderful illustrator. It turned out he knew a bunch of people I knew, including having gone to school with my niece. He knew Janine, he knew my publisher, he knew Maya, who had been coaching me. And so a lot of people knew who he was and had really good feelings about him. And so typically in a typical traditional publishing arrangement, the publisher chooses the illustrator and the author has nothing to say about it.
Yeah.
And so you could end up with an illustrator that you really don't like. But Janine was really happy to work with Robert. And I was really impressed with his work. And I just love the feel of his work and stuff. And so instead of her just going off and picking somebody, she made the arrangements to work with him. And I didn't work directly with him. She worked with him, but I did get to have some input into what the illustrations would look like and things like that.
You are very lucky in that aspect. Like you said, not many people have that opportunity to do that. And Lauren, what was the most difficult time in your life? And it doesn't have to be writing related at all. Looking back now, what was the most difficult time that really stood out and how you were able to overcome that and pull yourself out of it?
Funny you should ask that. So the most difficult time in my life was when my first husband was killed. I literally, weeks before, had become pregnant and he was in El Salvador and he did not know that I was pregnant. Then I found out that he had been killed. He was a Salvadoran activist and he was involved in the liberation movement there. It was a very violent situation and many activists lost their lives during that time. And he was one of many.
I'm so sorry.
Thank you. So that was how Danny came into the world. Danny was conceived the last time that I saw his father. When Danny was born, every child is precious, of course.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, the whole situation of having lost his father and being a widow and being a single mom, he was my lifeline. He kept me going. He gave me a focus. He gave me something to look forward to and something more than just grief and surviving to help me get through. And of course, I had an amazing family support system. I couldn't have done it without them and all my friends. And just, it took me a long time to be able to grieve because I was surviving. I had so many things on my plate and I was in survival mode for many years. But when I was able to really grieve, a lot of healing and a lot of wisdom came from that experience. And I think when the biggest pieces of wisdom was to never forget how precious life is, and never take life for granted and never take the people around you, the people you love for granted, because they can be gone in an instant. Not to be morbid about it, but just to really treasure what we have when we have it. That was the biggest lesson for me in that. Going back to the whole parenting of a gender diverse child, I really didn't know how Danny's father would have responded to him. And that was something that I thought a lot about and I even dreamt about. And it was actually a dream that helped me kind of resolve that feeling of confusion. It was a dream when he came back and basically I was afraid that he was not going to accept his son, but I told him, you have to accept him for who he is. I realized that at that time that I would just stand by Danny and just support him to be who he was. And it didn't matter, even if his own father didn't support him, I was going to support him to be who he was.
Wow, Lauren, you're so amazing.
You know, one of the things I learned from that experience too is that when people go through hard stuff, you find out what you're capable of, you know?
Yeah.
People have immense capacity to go through challenging times and learn and grow if they're given the opportunity.
Absolutely. I have to say, not even trying to distract you from her work, but you should really think about writing a memoir. I think that's something, if it hasn't crossed your mind yet, maybe you should consider it. I think you have some really powerful stories that a lot of people reading would learn from for themselves as well.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, I've been thinking about it, but I've written different pieces and I have a blog on Huffington Post, by the way.
I saw it, yeah.
Yeah, and I wrote a piece about Danny and his father as one of those blogs. It was called About Our Son, A Letter to My Late Husband, I think was what it was called.
You should definitely think about putting those pieces together. Sorry to be so like aggressive about it. It's like, Lauren, I expect a memoir from you. And I think that a lot of people would look forward to it, truly. If you feel like there's anything you'd like to share with the listeners, please go ahead.
One of the things that I think is so important is just to highlight the importance of diverse literature for children. There is a huge deficit right now of multicultural children's literature. And so the result of that is that children of color, LGBTQ children, or children who are both LGBTQ and of color and of many different backgrounds, many different ways that our children are different, there's still a real lack of that diverse literature. And there's a lack of literature coming from authors of color in particular. And when that literature comes out, it often doesn't get the kind of support that really helps it get the visibility that's needed. And so I just wanted to note that this book is not just about gender diversity. It's also about a multicultural family. It's about a multi-generational family. It's about a single parent family. And it addresses many of the differences that are real in the lives of our children and our families. and that they don't often get to see in books. And there's many other authors out there like me who are struggling to get their books seen. And so really huge appreciation to you for seeing this book and helping it get seen. Any opportunity you have to get books by authors of color and by LGBTQ authors out there into the public, our children need those books so badly. It's an emergency. They're really, really needed.
I agree. Thank you for sharing that, Lauren. Lauren, you're so wonderful. I'm like, is that an appropriate word? You're amazing and wonderful. It was really so nice to have you on the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much. So much appreciation to you for this.
And that wraps up our episode with Lauren Maeno. Lauren, it was so wonderful having you on the show, and thank you for that beautiful conversation. Storytellers, thank you so much for listening in, and I hope you took a lot from this episode. Please hop on over to Twitter and say hi to Lauren at Lauren Maeno, and head over to her show notes page at 88cupsoftea.com/podcast/Lauren Maeno. At the top of the show, I talked to you about the audiobook versions of Tina Fey and Haruki Murakami's books that I borrowed from Overdrive's new reading app called Libby. I downloaded Libby on my phone 2 weeks ago, and oh my god, it's been a game changer. I've already been a huge fan of Overdrive for 6 years as soon as I first discovered them through a library down the block from me. Just as an FYI, Overdrive was a reason I got into audiobooks in the first place, but after they built their new app Libby, the ebooks and audiobook selections are even easier and smoother to browse through. Makes complete sense after I found out that the design was inspired by user and library feedback and was built to get people reading as quickly and as seamlessly as possible. And a quick side note, Libby has also been designed to recommend awesome books to read next. I see tons of audiobooks and ebooks on my Libby app from our previous 88 Cups of Tea guests like Saba Tahir, Sarah J. Maas, Cami Garcia, Jeff Zentner, and a lot more authors you'll recognize. While millions of people around the world use their library to read books every day with Overdrive, half of the United States alone doesn't have a library card. Overdrive wants to change that with Libby. I could not be more proud to collaborate with a team that exists to spread literacy, reading, and libraries. Be sure to download Libby on your phone or tablet and start borrowing audiobooks and ebooks from your favorite authors. Head over to meet.libbyapp.com. Don't forget to join our Facebook group if you're looking for an intimate community for storytellers where you can check in about your writing and hang out with other listeners from our show at facebook.com/groups/88cupsoftea. I can't wait to hang out with you in there. That's facebook.com/groups/88cupsoftea. Have an amazing rest of your week, and I'll catch you in the next episode.
Hey guys, it's me again. Thanks so much for listening in on 88 Cups of Tea. Go create something magical today, and I'll catch you in the next episode. Bye.